Welcome to the Wealth Under Pressure podcast. Financial success very often has less to do with owning a financial product, earning a high income, or even being frugal. Instead, the path to success comes from having a comprehensive plan that enables you to optimize decisions and avoid mistakes. Join John Smallwood, a certified financial planner, as he identifies key areas of pressure on people's wealth and strategizes to reduce it. It's time to liberate your wealth.
Hello and welcome to episode number 7 with John Smallwood. Today's podcast is tax, tax, tax. It's all we ever hear about. And you know what, John, this is so timely, and it's something that I think drives a lot of people crazy because, you know what, this is all we hear about, but I don't think people get it, and I don't think, I know you don't think they do either. So let's talk about this.
Yes, it is. Taxation is around us. It's been around us forever. Not forever, but since the early days, right? I think 1913, the tax law came into effect as a temporary tax to refund, I believe, the Spanish-American war debt. I could be wrong on that. And it was only going to be temporary. And once the war debt was paid, there'd be no more taxes. Well, that didn't happen, did it?
No, not at all.
All right. So in financial planning, the erosion of our capital is probably the biggest thing that we could be focused on. Primarily, most people are focused on rate of return.
Absolutely.
But that's important. But it's, if you think of the leaky ship or the leaky bucket, there is money leaking out of our financial plans in all places. Taxation of our existing capital happens to be one of those biggest leaks that are happening. One of the biggest pressures, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And most people talk about compound interest, and we focus on compound interest as the, I believe it's the seventh wonder of the world or the eighth wonder of the world, as it's been called, right?
Yes, sir.
And it absolutely is when you look at it in a closed environment. And when I say closed environment, wealth compounding without taxation and without fees and transaction costs exponentially grows. As soon as you start to enter in erosion principles such as taxation, that wealth gets knocked down dramatically over time. And that's something that I don't think people really get. So what I want to focus on, we all think about income tax and we think about the withholding from our paychecks and we think about the FICA and the Medicare and the, so, you know, all those taxation that's being withdrawn from our paychecks. And then once we have capital left over, we now put it to work somewhere. We could put it in a bank account. We could put it in a bond. We could put it in a mutual fund, an exchange-traded fund, et cetera. We could put it in a lot of places, right? And there's a fundamental concept that is when you think about the way your capital is taxed, once you've put it into an investment, you have interest, there's dividends, there's capital gains, realized capital gains, long-term, short-term. There's a lot of different nuances. And I want to keep it very simple, and I want to focus on interest, and I want to focus on how interest is taxed in a person's financial strategy. If we don't get this concept, we're not going to understand more complex strategies.
Okay,
right?
Well, break this down because you've gotten my attention, and I'm sure the listening audience is wondering where all of this is headed. So break this down for us.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that we have a 50-year-old person and they've accumulated $500,000 of taxable capital, and they have it sitting in an account that's making 5% interest. The first question I get when I say that is, where can you get that today?
I wouldn't mind that. Sign me up for that, brother.
Right. But when you look back at history, you could see that occurring. You know, 1982, the 10-year treasury was 15.82%. CD rates were pretty high. Money market rates were pretty high. So we're focusing on the concept of money markets, CDs, bonds that are taxable as interest, so as taxed as ordinary income. So what we typically see is the concept of if you're 50 and you've got money sitting at 5% and it's going to compound over the next 20 years, that 500,000 without taxation could grow to almost $1,400,000, just under $1.4 million, okay? And what we're focused on is, okay, since money's a commodity and it's subject to erosion principles, what are those factors that are eroding that? So in the first year, if I am going to earn $25,000, and the reason why I'm using this math, because it's super simple. If you have 10 times that, you can multiply the numbers by 10 times. If you have five times less, you can divide it by five. You get to 100,000. It's the same concept, okay? But if I had $500,000 sitting at 5% and I earned 5% interest, at right in early January, which is coming up soon, I'm going to get a 1099 for the interest.
Mm-hmm.
And that interest is going to say $25,000. And I'm going to need to go put that on my tax return. And that's going to go on the taxable interest, which is two lines below your wages and salaries. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's going to go there on that tax return. Now, that dollar, that $25,000 worth of interest is going to get taxed on top of your income, on top of your salaries. So it's getting the last dollars that are going to be taxed. So we're going to talk about that later, the impact of pushing you into higher brackets, et cetera. And this is going to be very compelling and very interesting, because as we enter into a new tax law, we need to kind of get a better perspective of where we are before we understand how we're getting impacted with this new tax law. So what's interesting is on my tax return goes $25,000. My CPA calls me up and says, oh, John, you owe $10,000 of tax. And you're like, oh, I thought I withhold the right amount of money from my paycheck. Oh, yes, you did. But the interest that you earned created $10,000 worth of tax. And I'm assuming a 40% tax bracket. I'm not factoring in state and local. I'm just saying 40% just to kind of make it conceptual. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the year, now the question is, if I'm analyzing this in my financial strategy, where's the tax being paid from? Is it coming out of my earned income, or am I calling up the bank and say, hey, you need to send me $10,000 so I can pay the tax on my tax return? It depends on your circumstances. For purposes of the conversation, let's assume that it's paid from the account. And so at the end of the year, instead of reinvesting $25,000, I'm only reinvesting $15,000. So what's happening is, the following year, and this is compounding. So what we're trying to do is compound wealth, right? So we have this money's going from $500,000 to $1.4 million. And as that's compounding, the interest is compounding, but it's also creating an equal and opposite reaction, which is compound taxation. So if I'm paying the tax from the account, I have less money now working for me, right? So at that same 20-year mark, instead of having $1,393,000, that $1.4 million that we were talking about earlier, the taxation has eroded the compounding potential down to $930,000. So if I had a spreadsheet and I was projecting my retirement income and I forgot to factor in the impact of taxation, I'd be expecting to have $1.4 million, but somewhere along the way, the taxation has eroded my capital, and I now only have $930,000 where I thought I was going to have $1.4 million.
Sure.
Now, the interest, this is what I want you to focus on for a second, right? So I've got first year, the interest is $25,000. I pay $10,000 of tax. The last year, off the $930,000 portfolio, the interest is $45,000. It's now generating $18,000 in taxes.
Hmm.
Okay, so think about it. The tax went from 10,000 to 18. The interest went from 25 to 45. So when we talk about the seven goals of a financial strategy, you know, reduce taxes, reduce risk, reduce fees and expenses, increase wealth, increase the retirement income, increase the protection around that wealth, and pass more to your family. The first one is reducing taxes. And you've heard me say this on past podcasts, it's not about this year's tax savings. That's important. We want to focus on that. And as I said earlier, we all pay more taxes than we should. But the strategy that we're following here is the compounding of the wealth is also compounding of the taxation, which is creating an erosion factor.
Sure.
So as you focus on what's going on, it's a little bit deeper than that. And it creates something that's kind of interesting. Like if you take a hypothetical person earning $250,000, you plug it into a tax calculator, just a standard deduction, not a lot of deduction. So the taxable income is 233. The tax from a federal perspective is you're in the 33% tax bracket, but your tax bill is $53,000. Okay. If I add $100,000 to the taxable interest line, just say, fantastic, I got a great CD, I have $100,000. My tax has jumped up to $90,000. So I got $37,000 more tax. I'm still in the 33% bracket, but I got $37,000 more tax as a result of getting $100,000 worth of interest income.
Okay.
So it's higher than the 33% effective bracket. It's $4,000 higher. Because what it did is it caused all the rest of my capital to go through different brackets and my deductions to get modified and all those things, right? That's the game that's happening right now in the tax law, is that they're taking away deductions, they're exposing more money to taxation, they're doing more things with the taxation, with how much of our money is getting exposed to taxation and at what rate. So our focus is that this combination of compounding and compounding of taxation is not a good long-term strategy. And you want to look at ways to reduce that taxation. So you end up with the $1.4 million if it's possible.
Okay.
Did I lose you? Are you sleeping?
No. I'm trying to do the math in my head here, and I'm reviewing and I'm thinking. I guess it's making sense. It just seems to be flying in the face of some ordinary conventional thinking. I mean, your math is working out soundly, but I'm just what do you what's next? What do you do? How do you help?
Okay, so the first and most important part is that you need to understand the money and the capital that you have. How is it being taxed? At what rates? Is it dividends? Is it interest? Is it short-term gains, long-term gains? Is it real estate income? Is it royalty income? Is it income from, is it sheltered by depreciation? Does it have depletion allowances? There's all kinds of unique things in that, but you got to get present on where you are, right? You have to understand, okay, I've got money sitting here paying a tremendous amount of tax. You might actually be in a position where having lots of taxable income is okay because your income sources are not that much. You're not paying an exorbitant amount of tax. Because one of the solutions that I see in the industry always is, okay, put it in a municipal bond, right?
Right.
And completely avoid the taxation. But you're not compounding at 5%, you're compounding at 3%.
Right.
Okay, which the 3% compounding is the same net number of $930,000, but that's not a good solution to the strategy. Or defer the tax, where they'll say put it in, like if you put it in a annuity, well, you're deferring the tax to the future, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if I deferred it in an annuity, let's just say that I got the same 5%, let's say a fixed annuity, if it existed, it doesn't today, but let's just say that it did, the $500,000 would grow to the $1.393 million at 5%. And now the interest coming out of there would be $66,000, all taxed as ordinary income. You'd be paying, tax on the $66,000, which is good because I got the compounding of it, but I'm now getting hit with heavy taxable income on the way out of it. So what we're trying to do is create a balance where you don't necessarily defer the tax. You don't necessarily say, okay, just put it in a low yielding account. You create a strategy that's unique for you, and you look at all the circumstances that are out there. I've had people take the interest and push it into a municipal bond. Mm-hmm. You actually end up with more capital. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of that $25,000 a year growing in the taxable environment, you take it and you now put it over into admissible bond. Well, you got money growing at 5, you got money growing at 3, you actually end up with potentially more capital.
Well, okay? Now, is there anything else besides a municipal bond? And we don't need to get product specific necessarily, but that seems to be the general solution that I've heard from other financial services professionals. John, is there anything else that has the ability to help you grow without compound taxation, or at least reducing that as much as possible?
Well, in a scenario, you could take some of this capital and, like, let's say the interest, right? So we have this $25,000 worth of interest. If you reposition it into a cash value whole life or index, you know, policy or something, a policy that's growing on a tax deferred basis, you're actually going to get a very similar rate of return, but you're not going to have any taxation on that account as it's growing. And potentially you could end up with a lot more money, bringing back a substantial amount of that capital.
Hmm.
So if you did a policy that was a short-term payment policy and you move the interest out, I mean, you could have, instead of having the $930,000 or the $1.3 million, you potentially could have $1.1 million because you didn't put all your taxable cash into the policy. You left the cash there for the liquidity purpose, but you're moving the interest over mm-hmm. every single year. You end up with more cash. And it's you have to remember this always, is that 10 people that are sitting in a room, they're at a workshop, and they all have a different, unique set of circumstances.
Sure.
Different family dynamics. They have different assets. They work in different fields. The advice is being dispelled as it's, hey, this is right for all 10 people.
Mm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is those 10 plans, while if you think of financial products for a second and you visualize this, that they're, it's like you went into a bar. Okay. You know, it's Friday, so we're doing this on a Friday. So you're looking at a shelf of all different types of liquor and boozes and beers and whatever. They're all good. What am I trying to accomplish?
Right? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I in the bar to get, you know, to have a quick one, or am I in the bar to have a long night? You know, what am I going to do? But there's a different product for what you're trying to accomplish. So mm-hmm. if you think about it in the baseball term or golf or tennis or one of the, you know, in a sports analogy, you know, it's skis. I'm a big skier, mm-hmm. right? So you've got great ski boots. You got 20 different brands. You got 20 different skis. You got different bindings. You got different lengths, widths, you know, underfoot, under toe, you know, all different kind of concepts. The ski doesn't matter if I can't ski, right? It doesn't matter what kind of, I go buy the most expensive skis, the best boots, the best bindings, the best poles, and the most beautiful outfit, so I look wonderful. And I get on the mountain, but I can't ski.
Mm-hmm.
What did it matter that I have all the best stuff?
But that's the problem, one of the problems, I should say, with how people view financial advice, too, is they want the shiniest, prettiest, most beautiful vehicle, I'm air quoting there, and it might not be the right one for them, or they might not know how to use it.
Right, and that's the thing. Dalbar has done a study, D-A-L-B-A-R. It's an independent consumer think tank, and they will track. They have a study that they put out every year. I think it's been going on for 24, 25 years. It's for as long as I've been in the industry, I've been aware of it. And basically what it does is it says, here's the top mutual funds, and here's the performance that's reported by those mutual funds. And then they dig deeper into it, and they find what was the average investor who held the fund for the last 20 years, what return did they make?
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is, and these numbers are not accurate because I'm going off the cuff here, but it's, hey, the mutual fund reported an 8% return. The average investor only got 2.3%. And it's not because of the fees. It's not because of any of that. It's because they're chasing the shiny object. This year, this mutual fund was the best performer, and everybody runs to it because that's what they've been taught to do,
mm-hmm.
right? And they go, oh, then they buy it, and that one stinks. And now this fund is a better performing fund. So they sell that fund, go buy that fund. And they get into this downward trend, right? So financial advice is our focus, and everybody's focus should be this. Let's work on the swing. Let's work on the strategy. Let's work on combining multiple financial products to come together to create a strategy, okay? So you have you have a financial plan. That's your plan. You need financial products to implement the financial plan. But before you pick the products, let's look at the strategy, which is a combination of multiple different types of financial products coming together in a harmonious, unique, integrated, well-thought-out financial strategy for you, designed to reduce taxes, designed to reduce risk, designed to increase benefits and protection around your wealth, designed to decrease fees, designed to provide more income for retirement and pass more to your family. That's a strategy. Mm-hmm. The product's not going to do that, right? The right. product is just going to be, hey, I'm a mutual fund, or I'm an ETF, or I'm a life insurance product, or I'm a whatever. But the key is, if I organize, if I focus my time on the strategy, I think it's Charles Deming, there's an award after him. I think he went to Japan and he created, you know, fantastic processes. And the idea is that you spend 95% of the time identifying what the problem is. And once you identify what the problem is, now it's simple. Mm-hmm. You know how to fix it. You put all these things together. So our position is that back to the workshop, 10 people sitting in the workshop, 10 people listening. I've got thousands of products that I can implement the plan with. The financial industry is saying my product's better than your product. He's a terrible advisor. He's a terrible, mm-hmm. you know, manager. We have a better track record. Blah, 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 blah. Right.
Yeah.
It's, how do we take those financial products and organize them for all 10 of those people and make sure that it's achieving the 7 goals? If it's not achieving right. the 7 goals, you don't do it. And it doesn't really matter whether the product's a CD, a money market, a 401k, a Roth, a life insurance policy, that's a cash value policy, a term mm-hmm. life insurance policy. How you mix those things together in a coordinated manner, and how you coordinate it with your debt and your tax deductions and all the things that you're doing, that's the strategy of a successful plan. So when we talk about tax erosion, when you look at to dig deeper into the cycle, right? So if you understand that compounding of wealth is good, it's good. Compounding of taxation is bad. Compounding of fees is bad, right? Compounding into a risky environment can be bad. So it's not the compounding that's the problem. It's the compounding in a taxable environment that is bad. And I have a feeling it's not going to get any better as we move forward, okay? Mm-hmm. So matter of fact, if you think back to my analogy back in 1982 with the 10-year treasury being 15.8%, everybody's like, wow, I really would want that. The tax rate, the marginal top marginal tax bracket, was 50%.
Yeah.
Right? And inflation was what? A lot, mm-hmm. right? So you know, now we got lower tax, lower inflation, and lower interest rates. It's not that uniquely fundamentally different than it actually was back then. It right. just felt a lot better making 15.8%. So my position on this is that you have to understand that this tax erosion is taking place in every investment. And the solution is not to defer. Okay. Mm. Deferral is nice. It's part of a strategy. But if I've deferred all, you know, today the tax bracket is going to be, you know, the top marginal bracket is 39.6 as we record this. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's going to change.
Yep.
And then it's going to change again. And then it's going to change again. And then it's going to change again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the sequence and the time between those changes, but I know it's going to change. Because mm-hmm. over the last 27 years, it's changed a lot.
And so you're right? talking about massive flexibility, and you're talking about reviewing this on a regular basis and not listening to the talking heads on television bashing specific products and categories, because there's a place for it, depending on your specific situation, right? There's a place for each of those things, and sometimes there's a place for them, and then if things change, maybe there isn't a place for them. Is that a fair statement?
It's an absolutely fair statement.
Cool. Okay.
And my point is that if I'm deferring at potentially one of the lowest tax brackets that we've had in the last 30 years walking into next year, mm-hmm. and I'm deferring to a future bracket, I have a feeling the brackets might be higher 20 years from now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel that way. I could be wrong. But again, it doesn't matter if we're wrong or right because we're not predicting the future.
Right.
Right. What we're looking at is saying right now, today, $500 million sitting at 5% taxable interest creates $25,000 worth of interest. True. And that creates an equal and opposite reaction, which is taxation, which is $10,000 worth of taxes. And if I keep doing that, it's going to compound and the tax is going to compound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have if I live in a flat environment where my income isn't changing. Right. Think about this. I make $100,000 a year and I've got $20,000 a year of interest coming off my portfolio and I'm paying tax. Next year, I'm paying more tax. Next year, I'm paying more tax, but my earned income is the $100,000. If that's flatlining, my standard of living is going down because my taxes are going up, and then inflation is doubly impacting that.
Right.
All right. So this is not, and this is not about, you know, a single solution to a complex problem, but this is about understanding the principles of wealth erosion. When I understand how is my wealth being eroded, that's really, really important. In finances, there are five rules that the financial institutions want us to follow.
Okay.
I don't know if there's like a secret society that has this. Okay. But this has been going on, right? So all the marketing that we were talking about earlier, everything is about how wonderful we are and we're better than them and they're better than us and blah blah blah. Okay. And we've got a longer track record and we've got an average. I love this one when you look at somebody's website and I've got 27 years and Ed's got 27 years in the financial services business, my father's got 40, and we have 100 years of experience.
That's right.
Between all of us.
Yeah.
Right. Come on.
Yeah.
it's not exponential, our experience. It's here. But all that marketing is about how wonderful we are. Then, because it's a bank, an insurance company, a nursing home, I don't care what it is, a financial institution needs to get they need to tell us that it's good to give them money, and the faster they give us money, the better it's going to be for us. So all the marketing is geared towards pay off your mortgage quickly, dollar cost average, dividends to reinvest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So the bank is getting more money quicker. And the faster they get money, well, the more profitable they are, because if it's a bank, they can turn it around and lend it out.
That's
if
right.
They lend money. If
yeah.
They're in the business of really lending money, maybe not, right? But that's the concept, right? Then the third concept is once we've got it, we want to hang on to it for as long as we possibly can. So the miracle of compound interest is going to turn your money into $1.4 million. But when you look at the after-tax effect of that, it's only $930. They're not really telling us that, right? They're telling us, oh, you're going to get to the $1.4 million outcome. So all the strategies are designed to keep the money for as long there as we possibly can, because the longer we have the money, the more money that they're making in fees and et cetera. Now, when you get to the point where you want to retire, they don't want you to take it all out at one time, because you might get taxed, you may get penalized, you may run out of money. Fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth one is really interesting, where they've transferred the risk to the individual. And if you think about a lot of the financial products, like if you think about the car insurance companies, it's all about saving money. Most of the time that they do that, they're actually putting people in very low liability limits with very low deductibles. So that's how they're saving that money.
Mm-hmm.
And a low liability limit puts the risk on you, the individual. Because now if you get in a car accident, you get sued above and beyond your $100,000 limit, who's got to pay for it?
That'd be me.
Right. Now, you think about even like in some of these life insurance policies that we're seeing, the cost of mortality and the investment risk is all transferred to the client. So if the company's having a poor experience in their mortality, they can raise the rates without even telling you. So they're transferring the risk to the individual. So get us to give them money, make them feel really comfortable, give us money on a systematic ongoing basis as quickly as you possibly can, let the institution hang on to it for as long as they possibly can, dribble it back out to you, and transfer the risk to the individual. So the financial institution is taking the least amount of risk possible. Success. Now, when you're interacting with a financial company, if you don't understand those rules, it's really hard to play the game.
Yeah.
All right. So this is, taxation and compound taxation is a significant problem. We all suffer from it. We all have it, but we need to understand its impact and what can I do to do it. Now, when you get into more complex situations, which is using stocks and mutual funds and exchange traded funds, the taxation changes completely. But it's the same concept. It's just taxed at different rates for different reasons. And we'll if we get good feedback on this, we'll do more.
Okay. Well, I think there's a lot more to unpack here, right? And that's the nice thing about using this as a medium, is when, you know, when you, the listeners do provide feedback and say, okay, well, John, I want to know more about blank or blank or blank, right? Which is why podcasting is a wonderfully interactive way to get thought leadership out, because you do get feedback. I think that there's a lot more that we could talk about. In fact, I think the next one that I would like to talk about along the lines of taxes is really talk about peak earning years, talk about higher brackets, talk about some of those tax changes, and just be a little bit more specific on some of the things. Maybe tell us some stories about some clients that you've worked with when taxes have changed for them, whether that's a massive increase in taxes or decrease in taxes, and some of the ideas that you bring. But it all comes back to the same thing you've been talking about, John, and this is why this is so much fun to do with you. It's all about the relationship. It's all about you knowing your client, and not only just knowing your client, but knowing where they want to go.
Right. And trying to keep them out of the shiny object.
Absolutely.
Syndrome.
Sure are a lot of shiny objects out there. All right. Any closing thoughts?
No, but on our website, there's a free book offer for 5 ways your wealth is under attack. And one of the 5 things is compound taxation.
Gotcha.
And we go deep into it. So you can go to the website, smallwoodassociates.com, and request your free copy, and we'll get it out to you ASAP.
Fantastic. And with that, John, thank you very much for your brain today.
Thank you, sir, and always good to talk to you.
All right, this was Episode 7, Taxes, Taxes, Taxes. That's all we ever hear about with John Smallwood. Thank you very much. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure you take a moment to subscribe, so when John comes out with a new podcast, it will be delivered directly to your listening device. And with that, thank you very much, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Smallwood Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed by Smallwood Wealth Management and guests on this show are their own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the receipt of or a substitute for personalized advice from Smallwood Wealth Management or from any other investment professional, and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Smallwood Wealth Management is not a law firm or accounting firm, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.